What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live Financial News Edition. I am Emily Nicole, FinTech Correspondent for Financial News, and I'm pleased today to welcome my colleagues Trista Kelly, Features Editor, and Paul Clark, Investment Banking Editor. Welcome, Trista and Paul. How are you guys doing today?
Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good.
Great. Well, so today's session is on banker burnout and how that can affect Wall Street, what it might mean for the banks themselves. And if we just want to jump straight in here, Paul, what's the situation here? We've had a big run of stories for the last few months. So do you want to kind of spell out what circumstances the banks are facing right now?
Sure. So I think, you know, throughout the pandemic, no matter what industry you work in, I think the one thing that working from home has done is blur the lines between working and home life. But for investment bankers, which are already used to working 80-hour weeks, the pandemic has been fairly brutal, to be honest. They are currently experiencing the busiest time the industry has ever seen. In the first quarter of 2021, they brought in $33 billion in fees. And so the result really is that banks simply do not have enough people to deal with that workflow. So why has this come to light right now? It came out really in March after a group of 13 Goldman Sachs analysts on the West Coast of the US leaked a PowerPoint presentation online. It was on Twitter, it was on Instagram, which in itself is unusual for any sort of banking material to end up in those platforms. And it kind of painted a picture of, 110-hour weeks on average, I think, declining mental health and declining physical health as well. And the bankers essentially said, if this carries on for another 6 months, we're going to have to quit. And so this is really kind of a new focus on banking working life balance and the need for change, essentially.
And Trista, who do you think's being worst affected by all of this? Where in the banks are we seeing this happen the most?
Well, Paul and I were talking about this before the call, and it just seems to be very focused on the investment banking divisions, the M&A, the deals, the SPACs, the IPOs, the people who are working on that kind of stuff. And I mean, for the big senior bankers, it's not easy as well. They can't go and fly. They can't go and see clients. So it might be passed down upon, the interns, the juniors who don't get any of the upside of working in an investment bank, being mentored, getting a feel for the culture. They're just getting the downside, maybe living in a flat with more than one roommate. And so it's any of those perks are gone, basically.
I remember, Paul, once we were talking about this and you were saying that it's graduates that are really facing the hit as well, and graduate schemes that banks often run. In that kind of vein of pandemic living, what else have you heard on that side of things?
Well, I mean, I think, as Trista said, I mean, it is very much focused at the junior level, and these are the new recruits, essentially, who have come in this year. But if you look at the class of 2019, who would have started in September of that year, they probably spent about 6 months in the office until they were forced to go home as COVID-19 hit. For the class of 2020, they have not seen the office. So essentially what they have, as Trista said, is a huge increase in work. And they're not really meeting any of their team. So if somebody emails them at 2 o'clock in the morning, that person is probably someone they've never met. It's a name, and those people are being increasingly demanding on them. So, the junior guys are really feeling the strain. I think it's maybe just worth putting this into a little bit of historical context as well, because I think, you know, burnout among the junior population is not really a new thing. It's just come to light again this year. There was a case in 2013 where an intern at Bank of America called Moritz Earhart sadly died after working 3 days straight during his internship. And we've seen kind of examples of that over the last 10 years or so, certainly since the crisis. And in 2012, a former Goldman Sachs banker called Alexander Mitchell essentially tracked the life of a junior banker for about 6 years and found that after 2 years, health generally starts to decline working those long hours. And gradually they, you know, they have a whole load of physical ailments, from psoriasis to Crohn's disease, thyroid disorders to substance abuse. So now it's kind of coming to light once again.
Yeah, and where are we seeing most of this happen? You mentioned Goldman at the beginning as where that survey happened, but what are the other names being brought into this?
Well, I mean, I think it's across the industry. I don't think you can single Goldman Sachs out as being the outlier for 100-hour weeks. I think really what the Goldman Sachs incident has done is force other banks to take some action on this. So Goldman immediately responded by saying that it was going to be hiring more junior bankers. It was going to be redeploying people from different parts of the business. Whereas other banks have since rolled out a whole load of perks, a whole load of bonuses in reaction to this renewed focus on junior working life.
And Trista, what have you seen that banks are doing to tackle the problem here?
Well, Paul and I were also noticing how it just seems they're rolling out perks. You know, I think Jefferies is giving a Peloton away to their juniors. Some are offering, you know, cash bonuses for junior bankers, $10,000, $15,000. I think UBS said $40,000, Paul. Am I right on that one?
UBS has upped the ante today by offering a $40,000 promotion bonus for its analysts, which is pretty much double what any other bank has done, and also noticeably double of its main Swiss rival, Credit Suisse, who's one of the first to roll out a special bonus for juniors.
So I think it's worth noting that there's a little bit of PR here. They were caught on the back foot for getting exposed for banker burnout. It made all the headlines, and now they're kind of trying to soften their image. I think Citigroup's new CEO, Jane Fraser, came out and said, you know, I want to have Zoom-free Fridays. I want everyone to book a holiday for the May holiday weekend. I can't remember which one it was. And, you know, they really want to try to get ahead of these headlines and look like the softer investment banking industry. The reality of that, whether that's going to actually filter down into the junior ranks and make their lives better, it still remains to be seen. I think Paul and I were also talking about a great story he did about why it probably won't change is because, you know, there are the bench is deep and long of type A personalities who are willing to take these bankers' place. So if they don't want the role, they can just leave and someone else will happily fill it.
And what do you think the banks are doing to tackle this on like a policy level as well? What kind of hardcore guidelines are they putting in place besides the bonuses that they offer? Trista, why don't you take that one?
Well, from a policy perspective, I know, Paul mentioned the you know, Goldman just wants to hire. I mean, this is just common sense. It's if you don't have enough people to do the work, you're going to burn these people out. They're going to either leave or take sick leave. You definitely want to soften the workload on that front. Is that what you meant by policy, just to kind of like a hiring perspective, or do you mean making it easier going forward?
I think, you know, we on the one hand, you have these kind of fairly headline grabbing numbers for bonuses for these guys and salary hikes. And from speaking to the junior bankers, they're kind of like, well, that's quite nice, but I'm still going to quit. And I think it's kind of slight sticking plaster. And I think one of the litmus tests will be if within 3 months, whether once these special bonuses have hit the bank accounts, whether these guys seem to stick, you know, intend to stick around. And I think actually the stuff that doesn't make the headlines is the more, well, I wouldn't say interesting, but it's the more pertinent thing to making these the job easier on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, you have banks doing things like, you know, a pencils down policy on Friday night, which means that the banker, a senior banker cannot contact them over the course of the weekend unless it's an absolute emergency. You have things like, you know, if a meeting with a client is booked in a week in advance, then the person who is attending that meeting needs to give the work to the juniors a long time in advance of that. And then the other thing is things like, so junior bankers spend a lot of their time doing these things called pitch decks, which are essentially marketing documents for a deal. And senior bankers are notorious just for dropping them an email at the last minute to demand changes to the work, which, you know, usually takes them hours and usually involves them working through the night. So there's a kind of like a 12-hour policy before, you know, before the meeting takes place that no changes will happen. And I think from speaking to the juniors, it's that kind of stuff which is more likely to convince them to stick around, because, you know, they're not just in it for the pay.
And Paul, are they seeing this as, you know, like a solid change and something that could really change the way that they view their job, or is it just a drop in the ocean at this point?
It's a difficult question to answer. I think there were some interesting comments from senior bankers after some of these policies were laid out. So I know that at Goldman Sachs, David Solomon sent a phone call to the juniors outlining what they were going to be doing. And then at the end of that phone call said, well, don't be afraid to go the extra mile. And the other thing to remember is a lot of these protected weekend policies that the banks have had to stop people working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, have actually been in place since that incident that I mentioned in 2013, when they decided to implement these policies. And, you know, a senior JP Morgan banker told, I think it was the New York Times, that part of the reason why these policies weren't being enforced was just because of laziness. So they're saying, we promise this time is different. But I think, you know, you have to really see whether they will stand by their promises or whether they will kind of lapse back into the old way of working after a certain period of time.
Mm. And Trista, as well, from a shareholder perspective, could you say, you know, what are they thinking about all of this? Are they seeing these headlines and thinking banks are really making changes for the better, or do they also think it's, you know, time will tell?
Well, from a shareholder perspective, the banks are seeing unprecedented deal volume. As a shareholder in any bank, seeing that, I would be incredibly happy. I think the workload of the junior staff would be more of an ancillary topic for a shareholder. However, I mean, it's, you know, the image of a bank is very important for the talent that they attract going forward. And, you know, we were talking about this in the industry in general for a long time, even before the pandemic. A lot of banks have been competing with a lot of startups, a lot of high frequency trading firms. And, you know, now with the boom in technology, banks are also competing with the Googles and Facebooks of the world. And the pool of talent is a really important step going forward to look at. You know, you definitely want to make sure that you're retracting the top talent. And right now, you know, the Goldman Sachs and JP Morgans of the world look like they can continue enjoying that talent pool.
Yeah, because that's a really great point as well. We had a listener question come in from Lee, who asked about whether or not this workload increase would lead to consolidation in the industry. But on that point of consolidation, if talent is becoming harder to attract and banks are having to offer more and more perks to get the top junior bankers that they want, would it then lead to, for example, talent becoming more scarce in future?
Well, I mean, I think the thing to bear in mind is that actually the banks are not short of people applying to come in at the moment. So, I mean, we did a piece of research last year and we found that from the top six banks, around about 250,000 people applied for these front office jobs. And, you know, I think if you look at a large investment bank, they would probably take on a couple of thousand people every year. So they're vastly oversubscribed. in terms of, you know, the impact on the organizations, I think it often depends on the sort of organization you're talking about. If you're a universal investment bank with a large trading division as well, you know, obviously it's a concern if your bankers are burning out, but you obviously have other business lines. If you're a boutique whose bread and butter is the advisory business, and your juniors are burning out and flaking off to competitors, I think that could be a big concern for them longer term.
And then as well, Trista, I mean, do you think any of this could affect how the banks might perform in the future if they're having to think about letting more people take time off or spend less time on these deals, but we've already got Q1 results coming in with those massive deal numbers? Do you think that could weigh on in future? Should investors be concerned about that?
No, I think investors should be very happy that the workload is there in the first place. And as Paul said, there's a very, very long line of people willing to give up their Saturdays and Sundays galore for just the prestige. I think maybe what's not being emphasized quite enough is how prestigious it is to be a junior at an investment bank like Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan or Citi or Bank of America. Having that on your CV at such a young age really just paves the way for this unbelievable future. And maybe a lot of these people are thinking there's people who will quit, but some people are more than happy to sacrifice those younger years of their life for that kind of opportunity going forward.
Absolutely. I think you have to think about the type of people who secure these jobs, right? I mean, they spend years working to get to the point where they get an offer from Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan. You know, they have to go through spring weeks, they have to go through internships, they have to stand out from these 250,000 applications by doing extracurricular activities that, you know, make them seem a bit more interesting than just an economics graduate. So I think, you know, they're very much used to this kind of level of intensity in the job. I just think it gets to a point where the workload becomes so intense that it's even affecting these guys who are used to working all night and all weekend when they're at college.
And just a reminder for those of you watching, you can submit your audience questions in the Q&A box. We'll be listening to them and taking them as we go on. But one thing that's occurred to me as we've been speaking is actually as we progress to this new way of hybrid working, with teams being both in the office and not, and teams having to think about spending 2 days in and arranging that together while also being able to work from home. Do you think that's going to impact the way that banks approach their kind of workload strategy on burnout? Trista, why don't you take that one? Oh, Paul.
I just take my 2 cents from what I've been hearing from people who I've been talking to. I think you have these banks as a whole, where they have, you know, retail, big tech teams, big trading, you know, trading teams. And yes, they will move to a hybrid working model. I think for investment bankers, these deal makers, and particularly the juniors, I don't know if they will stay away from the office. I think actually they will just go back into the office as soon as they can. And you're already actually seeing that from some of the US banks in particular, with JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs kind of laying out their stall pretty clearly on expecting their bankers to be back in the office. And from what I hear, even the banks that have said they want hybrid working across the organization, within the investment bank, I think they're going to be expected back in the office.
Yeah, because Trista, you did a piece on this earlier today, but kind of what do we think those hybrid working strategies will look like for the future of investment banking?
Well, across the board, you know, people are saying, you know, we'll have a few people go in, we'll have a few people stay home. You can do what you want. You can be flexible. Everything's going to be voluntary. We want everything to be safe. But as Paul said, this is the cream of the crop, even in an investment bank. It is the top tier. These people's jobs are probably among the most important across the whole bank. And these are hundreds of thousands of jobs. So, I mean, across the whole bank is hundreds of thousands of jobs. And these guys are the cream of the crop, as are the traders. The traders haven't even gone home at all. a lot of them have never left their offices. So they're considered key workers here in the UK. Investment bankers will soon get that status as well, as soon as they can get as many green lights as possible. Jamie Dimon was unequivocal about this, saying, you know, it's just absolutely useless for people to work at home. They're not getting the benefits, and he's worried about the bottom line.
Mm. Yeah, because also, Trista, you bring up a great point. Some of the people in the banks haven't really gone home at all. Traders have been in this whole time because of regulatory requirements. And how is that really affecting burnout? Because regulators are requiring more than ever in terms of compliance, making sure everything's A-okay. But that must be contributing to this problem.
I'm not sure if it's really a burnout issue among traders. I mean, they've gone in from the get-go. I think their issue is more, like you said, it's a regulatory issue when, you have to have your phone be recorded. And if you stay at home, then you're using a cell phone for maybe a conversation that should be being recorded. And I think Zoom had a problem with this, that Zoom had created a product and told us that they wanted to create recordings for some of its calls, just in case you need to submit them to regulators. There's been a huge technology catch up, and our colleague Lucy has been doing lots on tracking WhatsApp messages, et cetera. That's definitely for the trading side. And I'm sure the investment bankers don't have that issue.
Yeah, and I mean, Paul, as well, we've had a question come in from Hal, who asked if this is a generational issue for burnout. Is it really different than it's ever been in the investment banking industry? You kind of alluded to that earlier with some of your examples, but has much changed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if you look at it from two sides, which we have done a little bit, when we speak to the senior bankers, the initial reaction to the Goldman Sachs story was just to kind of scoff at it, really. What's the problem? We have done this in the early stages of our career. It's how the industry is. You know, clients are demanding. They demand responses at the last minute. If you expect a 9-to-5 job, you're in the wrong place. You know, I remember one senior banker said to me, "Well, you know, I've got three grown-up sons, and they're just starting out, and they're earning, you know, $25,000 a year. I know how much our junior bankers are earning, and you know, they should be expected to work for this kind of long thing." But I think what banks are kind of slowly realizing is that actually there are a lot more outlets for junior bankers to complain if they feel that they're being overworked. So what you find is a lot of these, town hall meetings with juniors where senior bankers encourage them to go on do some yoga to unwind, they lay out new benefits which are not deemed good enough compared to the competition. They end up leaking out online, and you know, all these internal messages end up on Twitter, and it makes the banks look pretty bad. And I think, you know, the other thing is that these juniors, and I think they've been doing this for a little while, but they're certainly playing a game, right? I think before the financial crisis in 2008, you would start in banking, you would move your way up the ranks, you'd probably spend a decade and you'd get many seven-figure bonuses, and you'd probably be able to retire by the time you're 35. Those numbers are just not, they're just not in the industry right now. You earn good money, but you don't earn life-changing money. So I think juniors generally view this as a kind of rite of passage to go on to do something a bit more interesting after maybe 2 or 3 years. So, you know, the move to private equity has always been there for a couple of years for junior bankers, and that's still very prevalent. But you're also seeing a lot of them take some of the skills that they've learned and start their own businesses or make the switch into tech. You know, I think a lot of people who actually work for Deliveroo in London, strangely enough, used to work for investment banks, and now they're in corporate development roles there. So I think it does open up a kind of world of opportunity for you afterwards. And I think, the current generation are not necessarily viewing themselves as bankers for life, but just as a way of getting somewhere else.
Yeah, because that's a great point. We've had a question come in from Robert who asked, you know, if these bankers do choose to leave over the burnout issue, where are they going? Is it to go and do an MBA and try and make their career go a little bit faster, either in banking or elsewhere, or are they entirely choosing a different path? Trista, have you heard any examples of that?
Well, I'm struck by, Goldman Sachs' nickname is Government Sachs. Most of their alum are scattered all over the government sector, the lobbying sector. If you cover blockchain and Bitcoin and Dogecoin, I think you see investment bankers pop up in all of these startups and all of these new initiatives when it comes to, money. Gosh, these skills are just so unbelievably transferable. It's relationship. They used to call it a golden Rolodex. I know the Rolodex is kind of obsolete now, but the contacts you make, the network you have, working in these banks, you can pretty much write your own ticket. Is there anything that, Goldman can't do? I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I've definitely, at least in my area, seen a lot of Goldman or Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan names pop up as a board member here or a new chief exec here or there.
These lost careers. I think they'll be okay. They're going to land on their feet.
Yeah. So I think then finally, I guess the question is how will any of this change the way Wall Street runs or operates? Because while on the one hand, as Trista pointed out, you don't get that kind of immediate impact on the share price and investors shouldn't be too concerned about what's happening. But on the other hand, it's obviously big enough that we're getting the CEOs having to come out in force and talk about meeting free Fridays or Pelotons or what have you. I mean, Paul, what do you think is the future here?
Well, I mean, I can't see investment banking changing too much, to be honest. I think the very fact that the banks have thrown money at the problem to begin with kind of suggests that they think people are kind of motivated to work those long hours because they're being paid quite well. But I think longer term, the optics on this sort of publicity is obviously not good for the banking sector. They will probably have to change something to maintain their long-term appeal, because as I mentioned, it takes a long time to become an investment banker. You have to dedicate the subject you study at university. You have to do the internships. If you're a 16-year-old seeing that you could work 120 hours a week at an investment bank and, lose your mental health, I think you probably might start to look elsewhere. So I think, the banks will have to be conscious of the image that's come out of this incident, really.
But maybe a tangible example, Emily. I think Paul and I were talking about, a CEO of a major Wall Street bank was, giving the lip service to helping juniors, allegiances that everything would be easier and fine. And we talked to a senior investment banker at that same bank who was kind of scoffing at the idea. So whether the CEO is just doing PR or whether those policies will trickle down into the junior ranks, it still remains to be seen. I think Paul rightly is a little bit skeptical that anything is going to change, as we've been talking about, like how many hundreds of thousands of applicants are coming for these roles.
Yeah, I wonder if actually, just as a final point, kind of what do you think would be the next big perk they could offer? Because we've already seen UBS today double what its rivals have offered, and we've seen, free holidays and stuff like that. What do you think these bankers actually want out of a perk?
I remember years ago, private equity company offered a deposit on a house to its junior bankers. So maybe that's one they could do.
I think I'd want that one.
I mean, the New York property prices are not cheap.
Yeah.
The perk is putting JP Morgan on your CV. I think that's what, I mean, not to be cynical, but I think a lot of these bankers are probably thinking that way.
All right. Well, that's all we have. Do you have anything to add?
I was going to say it's not that important.
Well, that's all we have time for today. So thank you for being here, Trista and Paul. We hope you listen to our next episode tomorrow with Barron's Senior Managing Editor Lauren Rublin and Healthcare Industry Reporter Josh Nathan-Kaziz. We'll be discussing what's next in healthcare investing. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and have a good day.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.